Let's go. Live from the Impact Europe podcasting studios in the same room for the first time, we have Jana. Jana, would you please introduce yourself and tell us one thing that inspires you about working on the policy side of Impact?
Hi, Ben. Thank you very much, first of all, for having me here. I'm the new head of policy and EU partnerships at Impact Europe. And of course, my big focus is on the policy side for Impact. And I need to say that it has been my life on the policy side for more than 12 years now. I moved to Brussels in 2012. I stayed after a very brief period of internship at the European Parliament. I fell in love with the complexity of EU policymaking. It's something that really is exciting. And it's even more exciting to do that part of work for Impact, because you can see, you know, the consequences of the work and how important it is to have the proper, good working enabling policy framework. So it is certainly exciting.
Can you give our listeners an overview of the work you and your team did last year on SFDR? What is SFDR?
SFDR, yes, it's really one of those pieces of legislations which are very complex. It's requiring financial institutions to disclose certain information on sustainability. It was developed as one of the first pieces of legislation as part of the Sustainable Finance Policy Initiatives, which is really something groundbreaking at the European level. And I did join the team later last year, but there was enormous work done on SFDR throughout the year. At the beginning, we launched a survey. We wanted to understand the experience from our members and even beyond the members from the impact funds. How did they apply the legislation? What was challenging? These were the questions that we needed to know to understand what could be the solutions to go forward. We then met the European Commission, Commission's team that is in charge of the file, together with our CEO, Roberta. We did a webinar on the file, and then we started to work on the public consultation once it was launched. And in addition, we formed a coalition with our friends and allies from the GSG and the NAPS, and I think it was very enriching work to do it together.
And GSG, that's Global Steering Group, and NABS, that's National Advisory Boards. I see you're a policy person because you're using acronyms. Yes. Okay. I think you're even short selling some of the work that you did last year, because it wasn't just the letter, it was also op-ed pieces that came out about it, and a homepage takeover on Politico. And what I liked about those other pieces was that I think it broke down for a more general audience some of the key takeaways of the letter. So I want to just boil them down for listeners that might not necessarily be in the policy world as much. So the key recommendations from fund managers on how to tailor SFDR included, number one, clear differentiation of impact funds and implementation of unequivocal legal text. That was deemed crucial. Number two, enhanced focus on reporting on claims of positive impact, especially on social aspects. Number three, emphasis on tailored and proportional reporting requirements, especially minimum PAI indicators for unlisted SMEs. Okay, acronym territory. PAI, that's principal adverse impacts, right? SMEs, I think we know what that is.
That's small and medium enterprise.
Yes, of course. All right. And finally, number four, enhanced clarity on the alignment of SFDR with other legislations. And we'll get into each of these points, but I want to start with the differentiation of impact funds and the legal text. So why was this such a crucial point to the impact fund managers that you talked to about this?
It's a very good point to start with this question, because in fact, this is one of the first feedback that we receive from the members. We are looking at SFDR, which in title has sustainability, and it was tailored to really show to what extent certain financial products are aligned with the classification of sustainable activities, for example, the EU taxonomy. It's created a level of differentiations within the legislation to show the degree to which the product is sustainable or not, or is investing with a sustainable objective or not. However, it doesn't show the distinction or the extent to which the product may be investing for positive impact. And that's important. It's important for those products to be able to show it. And it's important for the end investor to know exactly where my money goes. So we wanted to ask the policymakers to make the differentiation between the impact investing strategies and sustainable investing strategies, because it is important, especially when our end goal is to close the gap for financing SDGs, because that's where impact investing is so crucial. So that's something that was one of the key points. Is there a follow-up question?
Well, actually, I think you covered a lot of it. But my next question was going to be, okay, this distinction between positive as opposed to negative impacts. So why is that such an important distinction to make?
Yeah, that's a good related question. Currently, under the legislation, because of the objective, it was to show for the financial products to what extent they invest into sustainable objective. At the same time, they were asked to demonstrate how they are not doing negative impact on any other sustainable objective. So the focus of fund managers were really to map and to calculate and to demonstrate where they do not do harm, right? To show that they are actually not harming the planet on anything else besides pursuing that particular sustainability objective. However, this is not what impact investors do. They do focus on really intentionally seeking to create a positive outcome, whether it's social or environmental, and they focus on making these measured and so that they can manage the process, of course. And the legislative framework was a little bit constraining because they were asked to focus much more on the negative impact, which they did. They did focus. They reported according to the Article 9, vast majority of those that we were asking the information reported that they did follow those PI recommendations. But it was constraining to them because they've done a lot of efforts to map where they do positive impact. But in addition to that efforts, they were asked to do the same quantity of reporting on where they don't do a negative impact. So it's kind of like a double work. So we ask the policymakers to consider that, to enable them, to give them that space to focus on what they do best.
Thanks, Jana. And that I think that really gives a super clear answer on the positive versus negative question. If I might ask a follow-up that's not on the list here, why do you think the original iteration of this legislation was focused on negative?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was like intentionally focused on showing the negative impact. I think the key objective of policymakers at the time was to enable investors to disclose where they invest into sustainable objectives. And at the same time, to not do a significant harm to anything else. So the logic of it was entirely outside of impact investing world. So that's why it's so difficult for us to relate to this framework, because the way of approaching to these investment strategies is very different. If you look at the European taxonomy, for example, the EU taxonomy on the environmental objectives, it's a classification of the best environmental activities that you can have. So it's kind of a best-in-class framework. So you show what already is green or environmental when it comes to an investment into certain activities, and you disclose to what extent your portfolio is aligned with such a framework. At the end of the day, you are not looking at making any changes or transformations in this concept, even though you can do it with this framework. Of course, you can do it, but it's not the initial objective of the legislative framework, which I think will be important to change in the next edition.
Thanks, Jana. Okay, I want to dig a little deeper on some specific language of these recommendations that we heard from fund managers. So when it comes to more, quote, tailored and proportional reporting requirements, unquote, can you give some examples for our listeners?
Absolutely. I'll start by saying that a lot of impact funds that are members of Impact Europe do focus on social impact at the same time, you know, like not only predominantly looking at the environmental positive impact, but also on the social. And where SFDR is lacking, it's the dedication and the same amount of indicators that would show the social part in comparison with the environmental part. One of the reasons is because it's less developed in terms of a framework. There is no social taxonomy, so you do not have a reference framework to link it to. The second reason might be that it's harder to set those indicators in a way that would be more comparable. And the last one was that there was a much more much stronger political will to go towards the E part, because we understand politically at the European level, at the highest political level, that there is much that we need to do to address the climate change. But there is also a lot of social crisis that we need to look into. So that's part, the proportionality on environmental compared to social, it's one part of the context.
Understood. And our last point, can you give some detail on how SFDR could better align with other legislations?
Absolutely. For example, there is one particular piece of regulation, European Social Entrepreneurship Funds regulation. This regulation is quite interesting, in particular when it comes to the social impact, because it sets certain criteria which could be very useful in the context of SFDR. And we don't need to replicate if we just integrate this regulation and the criteria within SFDR. But it's also true that on the market, for some reasons that we are going to be investigated in more details, the regulation is not used much. So there might be constraints that we need to also factor in when working with a workable concept on SFDR. I would come back on the previous question, because there is an aspect when it comes to SMEs which are unlisted that I wanted to elaborate on. The heavy reporting requirements, or relatively heavier reporting requirements, which are placed under SFDR, were designed for larger companies in mind that have the processes and procedures and capacities to provide such additional reporting. Whereas for a smaller unlisted SMEs, it might be more challenging to get the information holistically to cover every single criteria under the SFDR. So there may be a need to create some more proportionality for those smaller companies or smaller funds or those products that invest into those smaller companies.
Well, now that we've done point by point through some of these recommendations, I'd like to expand a little bit beyond our joint letter and look at what we're hearing from, let's say, the greater impact ecosystem. So AFM, for example, that's the Dutch regulator, right? They recommend a labeling scheme as a way to tailor SFDR. Is that in line with what you heard from the impact funds you talked to, Jana?
Yes, I believe so. In fact, during the Impact Week, we had a panel discussion, a session on SFDR. We wanted to interact with the audience, of course, but we also wanted to understand exactly their feedback on this question. So we asked the question, and the answer was really yes. A labeling system would help to communicate, in particular to retail investors, to bring a little bit more trust. But there is additional parts of the labeling schemes set up, which would need to be done well, which is to setting up those criteria on impact in particular. But I'm very happy that we agreed with the GSG and the NAPS in the letter, because we were quite granular on the minimum criteria. So the ecosystem is aligned, which is fantastic news, and it helps us to communicate as a one to policymakers.
Well, I have to admit that in doing a little bit of research for this episode, I listened to a podcast from Triodos, right? They're also an Impact Europe member, and they did a great podcast on this topic. I would highly recommend listeners check it out. I was interested in this one part of their discussion, though, because someone on, I believe the host, asked the question of what they thought the biggest flaw in the regulation was. So I want to put this same question, steal it right from their podcast, and put it to you. What do you, Jana, think the biggest flaw in the regulation is?
It's very difficult to point a finger to one single issue under the SFDR. And I also need to be fair to policymakers that it's kind of a natural evolution of the legislative framework. It was very groundbreaking at the time it was designed and introduced, very ambitious piece of legislation. The main focus, which was driven on determining the investment towards what already is sustainable, this is, in my view, the biggest flaw, because it hinders the impact of the legislation. Yes, we can bring more clarity into the requirements. We can unify the definition. It can be made more simpler for the investors to apply it. But the ultimate objective is really help drive the capital to where it's needed. And I think for that, we need to factor impact investment universe, but not only. We also need to factor a little bit of the transition finance into it.
Thank you, Jana. Well, I would like to conclude this episode by asking you two more things. The one is, what happens next with SFDR? And then I'd like you to give our listeners a sneak preview of what else you're going to be up to in this election year.
Sure. On the SFDR, you know, it may seem that it's going to be quiet this year. But the consultation period ended. It doesn't mean that we stop engaging with the European Commission. We forwarded a letter to the Commissioner. We want to continue engaging with them on particular aspects of our views. We need to continue to unite the ecosystem towards a greater coalition. So there is going to be a lot of, like, what you call behind the door activities about SFDR. The European Commission at the moment cannot publish any legislative proposal. They will wait for the European elections to be over. There needs to be a new commission or the cabinet of the commissioners created. It depends on who is going to hold the pen, who is going to be the commissioner for financial markets. And I think it's going to be determining what kind of next steps we will see. But we do expect a legislative proposal. Maybe at the end of this year, maybe at the beginning of next year. And then you will have political negotiations, a lot of negotiations in public. So we will be debating, and the process can take long. It can be quicker, but it will be probably a long process. On the second part around the European elections, yes, I think that's a very exciting period for us, because it's an opportunity to engage with the politicians at the European level, with the newly elected one in particular towards the second half of the year. So we'll be making friends, new friends. We will be introducing the sector, the ecosystem, who we are as investors. Why do we do certain things? How do we do it? And what's challenging in terms of the policy initiatives?
And you're going to be hosting a podcast, right?
Absolutely. Many podcasts. We want to engage with our members. We also want to give them the space to share what's on their mind.
But in terms of your own, with the Manifesto for Impact.
Yes, we are developing a Manifesto for Impact, which is going to be a kind of a blueprint in conversations with the policymakers. And as part of the launch of the Manifesto, we will be launching a series of podcasts to engage at the very highest level, and really to bring our world to them, because they need to understand who we are. They could experience how we do things, and they can only do that by talking to us.
Thank you, Jana. It's been a pleasure having you on your first episode of Impact People.
Well, the pleasure was mine.
Thanks to Jana for joining us on Impact People. As I alluded to at the top of the episode, this was one of the first times we were recording in our Impact Europe offices, right here in Brussels, a 5-minute bike ride away from the Commission. It felt only right to do this in person, because Jana and I are colleagues. If you're looking to dive deeper on 2024's policy topics through an impact lens, I can point you to our website. That's impacteurope.net. And up there, you'll find the policy tab. But let's go a step further. Jana will be hosting her very own podcast on impactful policies. That's coming in just about a month or so. And if you want to stay updated on that, you can subscribe to Impact Europe's policy newsletter, also available on the website, at the bottom of any page where it says sign up for updates. Impact People is produced by Nathan Ritholtz and Alon Shapiro, and it's recorded wherever impact happens. See you next time.